Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Max Clark Show, where we talk about things that matter. And thank you for tuning in to our series called The Untold Story Series. And this is part two of the untold story of the murder, the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Okay, so now I said Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. because, you know, he was a reverend. And I know growing up, we always said Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It always just seemed like such a long name to say because it was Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But that's who he was, and that's who he will always be. That's who he is. And, you know, we need to put some respect on his name when we say it instead of just Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., okay? So, at any rate, guys, we're going to jump right into this, okay? I'm not going to keep you too long, but I do want to share some information with you about this conspiracy, okay? Now, here at the Max Clark Show, where we talk about things that matter in our Untold Story series, we do not deal with facts. We do not deal with facts. Why? Because facts can be changed. The truth stands the test of time. For instance, for most of my life, Pluto was the ninth planet. That was a fact. Till some years ago, that changed. Pluto was no longer a planet. So that was a fact. It's no longer a planet. So the facts changed. The truth stands the test of time. Copy that? The Earth is a planet. That's not going to change. That's the truth. All right? So that's how we deal with information here. And if you would like any information or you want sources that we use here at the Max Clark Show, you can always send an email to themaxclarkshow@gmail.com. That's themaxclarkshow@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And YouTube is the Max Clark Show 747. The Max Clark Show 747. Hey guys, hit the thumbs up button. It helps the channel to grow. Hit the subscribe button. All right, it builds our community. And hit that notification bell so you'll be notified on new podcasts from the Max Clark Show and new episodes of our Untold Story series. All right, now let's dig right in. Here we go. This story here with Dr. King, it'll make you angry. It's sad. You know, it's an evil story. This plot is an evil plot. You know, how people talk about conspiracy theories and say, oh, so what is it? An evil plot to kill somebody? No, this was an evil plot to kill Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I mean, just the set. Now, he was assassinated by a rifle. The bullet, you know, took him down. And that's what happens when you get shot. The extra sad part is the way that it happened. The setup is, you know, it's cringeworthy, okay? It'll make you question things about the government that you wouldn't have normally have questioned, you know? It's a battle with truth and cognitive dissonance when it comes to things like this. So open up your mind. Always tell people, listening is a skill. So when you're receiving information, don't think. Because when you're thinking while that information is coming in, you're going to block that with your own thoughts. And those don't mesh well. Information and your own thoughts before you process it, that doesn't mesh well. And you'll come out misinformed, ill-informed. Okay, so just take this information in. I have, you know, information. I have, you know, documents to back this up. You know, sources from the government websites that back this information up. Court dockets. We have court testimony to back this up. So just take the time to listen and just be wowed, really, by what I'm about to share with you. Okay? So, without any further ado, let's get started. So, on December 8th, 1999, a Memphis jury in the wrongful death lawsuit of the King family versus Lloyd Jowers and, quote, other unknown co-conspirators, end quote, Dr. Martin Luther King, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated by a conspiracy that included agencies of the United States government. The jury of 12, six black, six white, came back. They deliberated for 59 minutes. They came back with a verdict of guilty. Guilty. Wow. The United States government was found guilty of the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And James Earl Ray was not the assassin. He was a scapegoat. He was not the assassin. Hey, I've learned to not be surprised by anything that happens, especially here in the United States. Never be surprised. Once you stop being surprised, then you can finally move forward and you can see things a lot more clearly. All right. So this here, you had O.J. Simpson was a trial of the century. You had the Leopoldine Loeb. That was the trial of the century. You know, you had different major high profile, you know, cases. That was the trial of the century, but one of the most important figures in human history, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. His court case, his assassination conspiracy trial was not covered by the mainstream media. Now, there was only one Memphis television reporter there. Name was Wendell Stacy. Wendell Stacy was the television reporter from Memphis, and that's where the trial was held. No mainstream media was there. None. This is in 1999. And it's just amazing how they kind of, not kind of, but they just skipped over it. The seriousness at which the U.S. intelligence agencies, you know, set this up is just mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. Now, in a complaint filed by the King family, it was King versus Jowers and other unknown co-conspirators. And the only defendant that was named was Lloyd Jowers, and I'll tell you why that is. Now, Jowers wasn't the King family's main concern because they knew they needed to use him on the court docket in order to get to the truth, which they already knew, but it was more of a confirmation type of thing. Okay. Now, let's see, where are we at? So, so the co-conspirators, they were anonymous until, you know, Lloyd Jowers, who was the former owner of the Memphis Bar and Grill, which is the establishment from which the shot rang out. He was the former owner. Though the King family, they were in effect charging the U.S. intelligence agencies, you know, particularly the FBI and the United States Army intelligence, with organizing, subcontracting, and covering up the assassination. That is deep. That is deep. I mean, from the top to the bottom. Top to the bottom. Now, this wasn't a criminal trial. Okay, it wasn't a criminal trial. but it was a civil trial. They tried it in the civil court. Now, here's the good thing about it being tried in the civil court. Was it criminal? Yes. But, however, it was tried in the civil court because the standards of evidence are much lower than it is for a criminal court. So, you know, for example, you know, the plaintiffs, you know, the King family, so they use, you know, audio tape testimony and videotape testimony, you know, unsworn testimony, they use it as evidence. And that works. That works. With a criminal court case, that's probably more than likely not going to fly. All right, the judge will strike that down. So the King family and, you know, Jowers and their attorneys, they agreed ahead of time that, all right, yeah, all this you can use as evidence. You know, you can use it. Now, here's the kicker. Here's the kicker. Because of the United States government's sovereign immunity, it wasn't possible to put a U.S. intelligence agency on the docket of a U.S. criminal court, you know, trial. They couldn't do that. So they had to say other unknown co-conspirators, because you can't sue the United States government, because guess who has to authorize this court case? The United States government. And they're not going to indict themselves. So, you know, thanks to, you know, the civil court and as Lloyd Jowers, you know, you hate to thank him for that, but the truth came out because he decided to cooperate. So, you know, again, it was a jury of 12, 6 black, 6 white, and they came out with a guilty verdict. A guilty verdict. It's just wild. So, Lloyd Jowers, he was 73 years old, and he was, you know, an old man, and he was ill. He was ill. He only spent, you know, 3 days in court. The judge excused him because he, you know, he was just too ill. And Jowers didn't testify. Jowers did not testify. And his attorney, Lewis Garrison, he said that, hey, if you guys want to subpoena Lloyd Jowers, he's going to plead the fifth. So it's really a waste of time even trying to drag this old frail man back into court. So they was like, okay, cool. No problem. But Jowers, he had gone public back in 1993 about this whole situation. Now, mind you, the civil trial was in 1999. Jowers went public in 1993. This is 6 years earlier. And with that prompted William Peppers, who was the King's family attorney and the James Earl Ray's attorney as well, that prompted him to uncover a lot of information and Lloyd Jowers' role in the King assassination. If you can find it, Sam Donaldson's Primetime Live, the show is called Primetime Live by Sam Donaldson. Lloyd Jowers, he did an interview with him. He sat down with him and he basically spilled the beans. He said that he had been asked to help in the murder of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And he was told that they would have a decoy. Okay, that decoy was James Earl Ray. He was part of the plot unknowingly. So they set that's the way they set that up. And he was also told that the police wouldn't be there that night. Okay, so stay with me just to see where I'm going as it relates to the plot. And in that interview, the transcript of which was read to the jury in that Memphis courtroom, Jowers said the man who asked them to help in the murder was a mafia-connected produce dealer named Frank Liberto. Liberto, he's since passed away. He had a courier deliver $100,000 for Lloyd Jowers to hold at his restaurant. $100,000. That's a lot of money back in 1968. So that's equivalent to over $738,000. So they were looking at $1 million, you know, damn near $750,000 to assassinate, you know, MLK. So, I mean, this was serious, serious business. So, yeah, so the carrier dropped off the $100,000, you know, for Jarvis to hold at his restaurant at Jim's Grill, the back door of which opened onto the dense bushes across from the Lorraine Motel. And Jarvis said he was visited the day before the assassination by a man named Raul, who brought a rifle in the box. Now, this Raul character, they say, the authorities say that this guy doesn't even exist. This guy doesn't even exist. So the thing is that James Earl Ray spoke about a man named Raul, and Lloyd Jowers spoke about a man named Raul. Now, listen to this. The owner of the Lorraine Motel was an informant, was a government informant. Come on now. It was a government informant. Woo, it's getting deep. It's getting deep. So, Mike Vinson, he was a reporter of a magazine called The Probe, the March-April edition. Other witnesses testified to their knowledge of Liberto's involvement in King's murder. Now, a store owner named John McFerrin, he said he arrived around 5:15 p.m. on that day, April 4th, 1968, for a produce pickup at Frank Liberto's warehouse in Memphis. King was shot at 6:01 p.m. So when when John McFerrin approached the warehouse office, he overheard Liberto on the phone inside. He was saying, "Shoot the son of a bitch on the balcony. Shoot the son of a bitch on the balcony." Now, cafe owner Lavada Addison, a friend of Liberto's in the late 70s, she testified that Liberto had told her that he had Martin Luther King killed. So Addison's son, Nathan Whitlock, said that when he learned of this conversation, he asked Liberto point blank if he had King killed. You know, he's like, Hey man, my mama told me that you had King killed. Did you have King killed?" You know, he was like, "Yo, this is bananas. Let me just come out with him. There's no roundabout way to even ask him." You know, so this is what Liberto said: "I didn't kill the nigga, but I had it done." And I said, "Shit, what about the son of a bitch taking credit for it?" And he said, he was nothing. He was just a troublemaker, a loser from Missouri. He was a front man, a setup man." Wow. Wow. The guy taking credit for it, James Earl Ray, didn't take credit for it, but the media made him take credit for it. Liberto said that he was just a troublemaker from Missouri. He was a front man. He was a setup man for this whole operation. This is, you know, this stuff is in testimony. So the jury, they also heard a tape recording of a 2-hour-long confession Jowers made at a meeting a year prior in 1998 with Martin Luther King's sons, Dexter, and former UN ambassador, Andrew Young. And on the tape, Jowers, you know, he says that meetings to plan the assassination occurred at Jim's Grill. This happened at Jim's Grill. And he said that, you know, planners included undercover Memphis Police Department officer. Oh, man, this is deep. Get ready for this. Undercover Memphis Police Department officer Merrill McCullough, who now works for the CIA. And he's referenced in the transcript as, you know, Merrill McCullough. So, you know, it's, you know, they know who this guy is. Now, the Memphis PD Lieutenant Earl Clark, a third police officer and two men. Jowers didn't know, but they thought they were federal agents. Okay, so you need to remember this Merrill McCullough. Remember him. Remember this name. So, Andrew Young, who witnessed the assassination, he could be heard on the tape identifying McCullough. Listen to this. Oh my goodness. This is like, it's bananas. So, if you can picture the scene, okay, get everybody pointing towards the bushes, right? And King's on the ground. You got a guy, you know, with land, putting a towel over his face, right? So Andrew Young identified Merrill McCullough as the man kneeling beside King's body on the balcony in that famous photograph. Now, according to witness Colby Vernon Smith, McCullough had infiltrated a Memphis community organizer group. They were called the Invaders. And they were working with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And in this trial testimony, Andrew Young said that the Memphis Police Department intelligence agent was the guy who ran up the balcony stairs with them to go and see MLK. Wow. That is deep. That is deep. So look at it. You have the owner of the motel was an informant. You have guys who are part of his, you know, entourage was undercover, you know, with the police department as well. So, I mean, everything was really coming together perfectly for this whole conspiracy. And Jowers, he says on tape that right after the shot was fired, he literally received a smoking gun. He received a smoking rifle at the rear door of Jim's Grill. From he received it the gun from Clark, from Earl Clark. That's the lieutenant of the Memphis Police Department. He received the gun. So the police department is in on this. You got to hear this. This is all documented evidence. Okay. Jowers broke the rifle down into two pieces and wrapped it up in a tablecloth. Raul, this mystery guy, Raul picked it up the next day. And Jowers said he didn't actually see who fired the shot that killed King, but thought it was Clark because he was Memphis PD's best marksman. He was Memphis Police Department's best marksman. Now, Andrew Young testified that his impression from the 1998 meeting with Lloyd Jowers, he said, you know, he wanted to get right with God right before he died. And he wanted to confess, you know, he wanted to confess it and he wanted to be free of it. You know, Jowers denied it, but he knew the plot's purpose was to kill Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He knew what was going on, you know. And also, you know, Jowers, he didn't want to go to jail. He feared going to jail. So he's like, I'm singing, you know, he didn't want to go to jail as an old man, 73-year-old man. Nah, he said, I'm singing. So, he directed Garrison to defend him on the grounds that he didn't know the target of the plot was King. He wanted his attorney to defend him on the grounds that he did not know the target was King. However, his interview with Sam Donaldson on Primetime Live in 1993, it suggested that he knew what this whole assassination plot was about. Okay. Now, Lloyd Jowers, his story, it opened the door to the testimony that just, I mean, man, you know, the systemic nature of the murder, it was just totally insane. totally insane. So guys, check this out. We're going to take a break. I'm going to let you absorb this information. And we're going to continue with part two of the untold story of the murder, the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Sit tight. All right, guys, we're back. Hey, thanks for tuning in and thanks for hanging in there. Okay, I know it's a lot of information to take in, but it's all truth. Everything is the truth. Okay, so just hang in there with me for a little while longer. All right, because we still got a lot more to go. Okay, remember, keep your mind open and receive this information, process it, do the research, and then come to your own conclusion as to whether you think this is still a conspiracy theory or if this is the truth. If this is the truth, okay? Documented evidence. So let's get right back into it. So James Lawson, he was one of Dr. King's friends and he was an organizer from the SCLC. He testified that, you know, Dr. King's stand on the Vietnam War and the Poor People's Campaign, okay? The Poor People's Campaign. That created enemies in Washington. So we have to understand that it wasn't the Vietnam War opposition that led up to the assassination, okay? Everybody was protesting the war. Hell, Muhammad Ali protested the war. They tried to draft him, and he was like, no, I'm not going. You can put me in jail. They didn't assassinate him. So as big as Muhammad Ali was, as popular as he was, and the voice that he had, and he was a Muslim with the Nation of Islam, come on. And they didn't take him out. It wasn't about the war. It was about the Poor People's Campaign. And what we have to understand about the Poor People's Campaign included everyone. Everyone, okay? And they knew that King had the power to bring everyone together, because at all the mess that was going on, at all of the racism and, you know, at all that mess, everybody started to look at each other and say, we may not look alike, but hell, we going through the same thing. We all poor. We're all at the bottom. So yes, redistribute the wealth so that we can be, you know, so that we can help pull ourselves up. And that's what that was about. That's what King's assassination was about. They was like, hey, the government was like, hey, you know what? Now you're taking it too far. Because what you have to understand about capitalism is a result of consumerism. Okay, capitalism is a result of consumerism. As long as you got people at the bottom who want to get to the top or feel like that they're at the top, they're going to spend money trying to get there. And without an even playing field, the poor is their situation is a quagmire. Okay. So that's what we have to understand. And as long as it's a quagmire, there's going to be consumerism, which gives birth to capitalism, which rules the world, especially the United States. Now, after King made his speech at New York's Riverside Church on April 4th, 1967, one year to the day that he was assassinated, where he condemned the Vietnam War, and he identified the United States government as the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. That was his quote, the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. and the White House and FBI was pissed. Was pissed. They was like, you telling the truth about us? You telling the truth about this war machine? I'll fix you. You know, and you want equality for everyone? I'll fix you. So J. Edgar Hoover, he sent them, check it out. This is crazy. Now, we all know how evil J. Edgar Hoover was. And he sent the memorandum to President Johnson, Lyndon B. Johnson. And it said that King is a danger to the security of the United States. And based on King's recent activities and public utterances, that he is an instrument in the hands of subversive forces trying to undermine our nation. Man. So that right there, that was, in other words, it was take him out. That's when the plan started. You know, they started trying to figure it out. They started trying to figure it out. So they started infiltrating them. Infiltrating this, his campaign. You know, you had the owner of the motel was an informant. His bodyguard was an informant. His driver was an informant. Oh, man. And then his bodyguard runs up the stairs after he's shot. Now, notice I said shot and not assassinated yet, because King wasn't dead yet. He runs up the stairs and he's putting a towel or whatever it was over his wound. How evil do you have to be to do something like that? To work undercover and somebody try to take this man out, and you try to act as if you're there for him to make sure he's okay? That's evil. Pure evil. You know, just like with the assassination of Malcolm X, they infiltrated him. The guy who was holding him, who was trying to, after Malcolm X was assassinated, the man who was giving him mouth to mouth, this man is riddled with bullets and he's giving him mouth to mouth. He was an informant. He was an informant. Okay? It's deep. It's deep. The murder of Fred Hampton. Murder of Fred Hampton. Bam. One of the people who was part of the Panthers, who infiltrated the Black Panthers, was given government information and gave them blueprints of the apartment. They came in, assassinated Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, and this guy was his pallbearer. He carried him to his grave. So it's, you know, and the government picks people who look like you to infiltrate your programs, your pursuit of justice, your pursuit of happiness, and your fight and your struggle for life, liberty, and property was the original word. You know? And they figure, well, you'll let your guard down because they look like you. You let your guard down, you let all this information out, and they go back and get information. And then when it's time to take you out, they act as if they're really there to make sure you're okay. Oh my God, he shot. You know, just pure evil, pure evil. And they get to walk away scot-free. And the man who infiltrated King and who's holding the towel over his face, he works for the CIA now. Come on, man. Come on. Y'all ain't ready for this. Y'all not ready for this. All right, let's get back into it. All right, I went on my tangent. Let's get back into it. We're only 9 minutes deep. 9 minutes deep. Okay. Now, hatred and fear of Dr. King, I mean, it deepened, because they was like, oh, damn. Okay, he's pulling these people together. Now, at the same time, 73% of Americans, you know, hated Dr. King. 55% of blacks didn't like Dr. King. Okay? But this Poor People's Campaign, he was pulling it together. He was about to make something happen. He already made big things happen. Legislation being passed. Now, it's for everybody. Everybody. And you know, the powers that be, they weren't having that. And he was bringing the Poor People's Campaign to the Capitol, Washington, D.C. And he was going to shut down, you know, the nation's capital that spring of 1968 through a massive civil disobedience until the government agreed to abolish poverty. Now, imagine that. The whole world looking. And you got poor people camped out in the nation's capital. You know, they call it Tent City. And the whole world's looking on and saying, oh, wait a minute, this is America. This is the United States. There's, you know, there's their freedom and justice and democracy and, you know, all that type of, you know, mess that they spread that the United States says it has. They're going to find out it's not true. They had to stop it. They had to stop it. And, you know, the Memphis sanitation workers strike. That was going to be the beginning. That was going to be the beginning of the Poor People's Campaign. And that was the revolution that was going to hopefully, you know, redistribute the wealth, that, you know, the income. And, you know, Coretta Scott King, you know, Queen Mother Coretta Scott King, she testified that, you know, Dr. King, he had to return to Memphis in 1968, in April of 1968, because when he went before, the violent demonstration that happened there, and they blamed Dr. King because the, you know, the demonstration turned violent, and they blamed Dr. King, which I don't know how, but that was part of the plan as well, you know. Right after Dr. King arrived in Memphis to join the Sanitation Workers March, it was on March 28th, 1968. A few days before they took him out. Okay. The scene turned violent, but it was infiltrated. It was subverted by government provocateurs. All right. But King, he had to return to Memphis on April 3rd, and he had to prepare for a truly nonviolent march. You know, Mrs. King, Coretta Scott King, she said it was to prove, you know, the SCLC could still carry out a nonviolent campaign in Washington. King was like, no, I got to make this right. I'm leading these people. I have to make this right. And, you know, April 4th, we all know what happened. So we're going to go to April 3rd, 1968. Floyd Newsom is a black firefighter and a civil rights activist. He heard King's I've Been to the Mountaintop speech, you know, at the Mason Temple in Memphis. And when he was going home, Newsom, he returned a phone call from his lieutenant, and he was told that he had been temporarily transferred. Now, listen to what I'm saying. Listen to what I'm saying. This, all of this is part of the setup. All of it. Even the motel where he stayed. Oh man, this is, it's crazy. It's crazy. Okay, let me get back. So he told him, hey, you've been transferred effective April 4th. You've been transferred effective April 4th from Fire Station 2, located across the street from the Lorraine Motel, to Fire Station 31. Now, Newsom testified that he was not needed at the new location. He's like, they didn't need me there. However, he was needed at his old station because his departure left it out of service unless somebody else was detailed to his company. This is what he said. His quote, it left it out of service unless somebody else was detailed to my company in my stead, end quote. So when he left, the fire station was out of service. And after, you know, a bunch of questions, he kept asking, what the hell is going on? You know, he was eventually told that he had been transferred by request of the police department. By request of the police department. Now, the only other black firefighter at Station 2 was a firefighter named Norvell Wallace. And he testified that he too received orders from his superior officer on the night of April 3rd for a temporary transfer to a fire station far removed from the Lorraine Motel. And he was later told vaguely that he had been threatened, that his life had been threatened. Right? This is what they told him. Hey, man, hey, your life is being threatened, so we got to get you out of here. So, and yeah, so Wallace, right? Yeah, we're talking about Wallace, the other firefighter who was transferred, and they said that they had threatened his life. That's what he was told. And he said, well, I guess it was because I was putting out fires. You know, he was, you know, being funny. He said, I guess it was because I was putting out fires. That's what he told the jury. And he was asked if he ever received a satisfactory explanation for his transfer. And Wallace answered, no, never did. Not to this day. Now, in a March-April probe publication, Mike Vincent described a similar removal of Ed Reddit, a black Memphis Police Department detective, from his Fire Station 2 surveillance post 2 hours before King's murder. Again, I repeat that. Ed Reddit, a black Memphis Police Department detective, he was pulled from his surveillance from Fire Station 2 directly across the street from the Lorraine Motel 2 hours before Dr. King was murdered. Okay, now, to understand the whole Reddit incident, it's important to note that it was Reddit himself who initiated his watch on Dr. King from the firehouse across the street. And Reddit testified that when King's party and the police accompanied him, including himself, you know, Detective Reddit, arrived from the airport at the Lorraine Motel on April 3rd, he noticed something unusual. He said, when Inspector Don Smith, who was in charge of security, told Reddit he could leave, Reddit noticed that there was nobody else there. I can go, I can leave. Wait a minute. You know? And in the past, when they were assigned to Dr. King and Reddit was, he had been part of the all black security team for Dr. King, they stayed with him. They stayed with him the whole time. He said, I saw nobody with him. So what he did on his own, he went across the street and he asked the fire department, could we come in and observe from the rear? And that's what they did. And given Reddit's concerns for King's safety, his particular watch on the Lorraine Motel, I mean, not, you know, that kind of, you know, that wasn't part of the plans. You know, that wasn't part of the plans for him to go over there and say, hey, you know, can we do surveillance from over here? Because, you know, this is what I'm here for. Reddit also testified that late in the afternoon on April 4th, Memphis Police Department intelligence officer Eli Arkin came to Fire Station 2 to take him to central headquarters. Right? So they said, well, hell, this wasn't part of the plan, him doing surveillance across the street from the motel with a direct view from the fire station. We'll fix this. So he took him to central headquarters. And the police and fire director, Frank Holloman, formerly an FBI agent for 25 years, and 7 of those years he was a supervisor at J. Edgar Hoover's FBI office. So we already know what this guy is about. Okay. And he ordered Reddit home. He said, go home. Against Reddit's wishes, and he was accompanied by Arkin. And the reason Holloman gave Reddit his removal from King's Watch, because Red had initiated the day before that his life had been threatened. That his life had been threatened. Now, in an interview after the trial, you know, Reddit, he said that the story of, in his testimony in 1978 on a question before the House Select Committee on assassination, it was part of a heavily pressured cover-up. He said it was a farce. It was a total farce. Okay? It's heavy. It's heavy. So they subpoenaed Reddit, you know, by the House Select Committee on assassinations, testify, and he came to realize not so much on this strange removal from Fire Station 2 as the fact that he had spoken about it openly to writers and researchers. Now the HSCA, which is the House Select Committee on Assassinations, they narrowly, you know, on a discrepancy between Reddit surveilling King as he was doing and acting as security. He was acting as security, I'm sorry, in order to discredit the, you know, the story of his removal. Now, Reddit was first grilled by the committee for 8 straight hours. 8 hours. They grilled him. You know, in a closed executive session. So I would like to see the transcript of that. After that full day of hostile questioning, he finally said, you know, late in the afternoon, he said, I came here as a friend of the investigation. You know, like, I am, you know, I'm police. I'm police. What's up with this? He said, I came here as a friend of the investigation, not as an enemy of the investigation. You don't want to deal with the truth. He told the committee, he was pissed. He said, y'all don't want to deal with the truth. He said, that if the secret purpose behind King's conspiracy was like the JFK conspiracy, which was to protect the country, then just tell the American people, hey, we took them out so that we could protect the country. So they'll be happy with that and quit fooling with folks and trying to pull wool over their eyes. So he was pissed. He started letting them have it. So after 8 hours of questioning, he's like, wait a minute. Thought we were on the same side, you know? But again, there was a brother. He was talking, and they did not like that. And they didn't like that, so they really grilled him pretty hard. So, I mean, just think about that. Now, this is in 1978. This is in 1978. You know, this is 10 years later. 10 years later, and they're still talking about it, and the testimony was a farce. Even 10 years later, they still did not want this to come out. So when that closed hearing was over, Reddit received a warning call from a friend in the White House. He said, man, your life ain't worth a wooden nickel. You know, and Reddit, he said this public, you know, in his public testimony the next day, he said it was a setup. The bottom line, that was a setup. So Senator Baker, he decided that I wouldn't go into this open hearing without an attorney. Okay? When a lawyer arrived with, you know, Reddit at the hearing, they were ushered right back out across town to the executive director in charge of the investigation. And they looked through a book to look at the questions and answers. They looked at the questions and answers, the questions that was going to be asked, and he had to prepare the answers. You know, so in essence, they were saying, this is what you're going, you know, this is going to be the questions, and these are going to be your answers. That's it. It was all made up. It's all designed. Questions and answers, you know, what to say, what not to say. Again, it was a total farce. And former Memphis police captain Jerry Williams, he followed Reddit to the witness stand. And Williams you know, he had been responsible for forming a special security unit of black officers whenever King came into Memphis. And that's the unit that Reddit, he served in that unit. And Williams took pride in providing the best protection for Dr. King, which included, you know, advising him never to stay at the Lorraine Motel. Never to stay at the Lorraine Motel. Why? Because they couldn't furnish proper security there. It was just an open view. You know, he said anybody could. He said there was no protection at all. He said, to me, that was a setup from the very beginning. And for King's April 3rd, 68 arrival, Williams was, for some reason, not asked to form the special Black Bodyguard Task Force. He was told years later by his inspector, a man whom Jowers identified as a participant in the planning meetings at Jim's Grill, that the change occurred because somebody in King's entourage had asked specifically for no black security officers. Williams told the jury that he was bothered by the omission even till this day. Whew. Guys, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. But hey, look, we're gonna stop there. We're gonna stop there. All right. Part three is coming out. We're gonna wrap this up in part three, the Untold Story series, the Untold Story of the Death, the Murder, Assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Guys, thank you so much for listening, for opening your mind, and allowing me to take up some of your time and give you some of this information, this truth on what happened in the conspiracy assassination. All right, hey guys, look, do me a favor, hit that thumbs up, hit that subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share it with your friends. Share it with your friends. Hey, you know, talk about it this weekend. You know, again, if you want information, if you want sources, email me, themattsclarkshow@gmail.com. That's themattsclarkshow@gmail.com. You can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Matts Clark Show, and on YouTube, The Matts Clark Show 747 at YouTube, The Matts Clark Show 747. Hey, protect your mind. Protect your mind. Always be willing to learn. Absorb information. We have to deal with objective accountability. We have to deal with the truth. As always, love somebody, but more importantly, love yourself. Stay tuned for part three of Untold Stories.